This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
First up, though, let's talk about that mini-budget being announced by Rishi Sunak later today. I say mini-budget is evolving, we think, in the region of £10 billion of changes to government expenditure. But in the big scheme of things, after that furlough scheme and all the help for the economy during the lockdown, that is just money down the back of the sofa, isn't it? Jobs, 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 we're told, is what it's all about. £2 billion kickstart work placement scheme for the young people aged 16 to 24 seems to be the latest trail today. It would last for 6 months. Employers would get £1,000. The young people would get a £5,500 payment for those 6 months. And it's hoped that it would help some 300,000 people on universal credit. But is it enough? Well, let's talk to Andrea Leadsom, former business secretary and Conservative MP. Good morning to you.
Morning, Julia.
There have been so many measures to try and help so many people, employers, employees, self-employed and the like, in the last few months. And the numbers have been astronomical, eye-watering. Is £2 billion a work placement scheme for 6 months for 300,000 young people? Is this really going to be enough to try and stem the flow of those job losses?
I think it's going to need to be increased, and I think the Chancellor has said it will be increased if the demand is there. But what's really important about this is when you are 16 to 24, you need to get into work. There's a lot of evidence that shows that young people who never get a job or who lose their job at a very young age really do struggle to get back into the workplace. So what this is seeking to do is to encourage employers who, after all, it is businesses that create jobs, not government. It's encouraging those employers to look at how they can use the talents of young people better and help them to employ them so that they can get back on that path to recovery. So I think it's actually really useful seed money.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people are saying that this is the crucial time for many young people, although a lot of other people listening right now, maybe got their families, their mortgages, been in work for many years. Their job may, they think, be disappearing once the furlough scheme ends, their business going under, just simply can't keep going without any customers. They'll be saying, well, what about us?
Yeah, and I think the Chancellor has shown very clearly his determination to protect the economy. He's, the furlough scheme, the self-employment support, the business grants and so on have demonstrated a commitment to keeping the economy afloat. And what I, the furlough scheme being extended to October with a sort of slow withdrawal of government support is the right way to go. But at the same time, I do think businesses need to be thinking creatively about if their business as it stands now simply can't reopen, rehappen for the next period of time. They need to think creatively about what next for them. And businesses do have superb ideas. We had in my own constituency, the Silverstone Technology Cluster started turning their hand to producing PPE. We had a Northampton gin distillery producing hand sanitizer. Different businesses have been able to look at their processes and their products and think about what could be valuable in a post-coronavirus world.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that the government support is vital, but so too is businesses being determined to find a way forward.
Yeah, I have to say, I've been bowled over, particularly by small business people, in terms of their entrepreneurial spirit and their ability to say, think creatively. And it's, I think this has been really one of the really unsung things of the crisis, actually. They're you know, right, just turning to a takeaway, going online, and as you say, changing what they're doing. There is still a worry about the 3 million people who fell through the cracks. We spoke to Lib Dem MP Jamie Stone earlier. He's got a very large cross-party group of MPs across, you know, across all parties, saying, look, we've got to give some help for the people who, you know, set up a business too recently, who just left a job, just about to start a new job, both jobs not eligible for a furlough scheme. Obviously those people eligible for universal credit, but people who perhaps, you know, worked really hard, done all the right things, but have somehow slipped through the cracks. Is there going to be anything, do you think, in terms of some grants, some special sort of one-off measures to help those people?
I completely share Jamie Stone and other colleagues' concerns about that. You know, there has been, due to timing, and for very good reasons, actually, because of the way that recording of employment works. So the system simply couldn't work for them. But I do share that concern that they haven't had any help and they should have some help. But what I would like to see is the Chancellor really focused on promoting new jobs. So, you know, the green economy is a massive opportunity for the UK. There's already 450,000 green collar jobs and predicted on the current trajectory to be 2 million by 2030. But I genuinely think that the green economy in the UK could be as big, if not bigger, than financial services. And there are jobs for all sorts of people in it, you know, ranging from delivery drivers to marketing people to engineers to scientists to installers, you know. And so I was really pleased that the Chancellor announced yesterday £3 billion for example, improving your energy efficiency in your home, improving your insulation and so on. And those sorts of government schemes will lead to the creation of many more jobs. So what I'm hoping is that the Chancellor is very much going to be focused on promoting and supporting businesses to create the jobs of tomorrow.
Okay, well, let's also talk about the prospect of a stamp duty cut, a holiday, basically raising the threshold up from 125,000 when you start paying stamp duty on your property purchase to 500,000. And basically, you could save people, anyone looking to buy during the period of this holiday, we don't know whether it's 6 months, a year or whatever, £15,000, not to be sniffed at. But that's whether you're a first time buyer, buying a second or third home, or even if you're buying a home that's worth a lot more, you're still going to get the benefit of that. Now, there'll be a lot of people who say, look, that's great. And I know quite a few people who are looking to move home or buy their first home in the coming months. And they are very excited about this. Kickstart the economy, the housing market. But there'll be a lot of people who say they're still renting. They haven't got a chance of buying a home. Why are you helping the people who've already clearly, you know, doing better than those who are stuck paying private rents?
Yeah. And this actually, you highlight what is something that's very unfair about this coronavirus pandemic, is that, you know, there are some people who've been, you know, safe at home with a garden, with able to work from home and to carry on earning and so on. And then there are others who are renting perhaps in, you know, poor quality accommodation with no outside space and who have lost their jobs. I mean, it has been a very brutal and unfair pandemic, and, you know, many people will have suffered. But the advantage for the whole economy of a stamp duty holiday is, of course, that when somebody moves home, that creates a lot of opportunity in the economy, because, you know, you need removal people, you need, you'll often sort of get a painter and decorator in, you'll need a plumber to move your white goods and so on. So actually, it does help to spark new activity in the economy, which helps to create jobs. So I think what the Chancellor will be looking at is not sort of trying to reinforce already unfair divides, but actually to look at ways that gets the economy working again and promoting those jobs that we are desperately going to need to see.
I was thinking, all my questions to you, I've realised, fall into this vein of the difficulty for any Chancellor right now, especially a Conservative Chancellor, dealing with you know, how to tackle the economic fallout of the pandemic. Is it, you're almost damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, spending too much money, how are you going to pay for it? You should be going you know, much less far, because you're spending money you don't have. And at the same time, but why aren't you helping this person? If you're helping them, why aren't you helping that firm? Why aren't you doing this? There is an element, isn't there, where Rishi Sunak is going to face, well, praise on all sides, but criticism on all sides for whatever he does.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's been the case, you know, in my email inbox as an MP, is loads of people saying, thank goodness for the measures he's taken, and others saying, but what about me and what about this? But ultimately, of course, what the Chancellor has to do is to keep a very careful eye on our nation's fiscal position, because ultimately, you know, this year we're going to be borrowing hundreds of billions more than we expected to. And in the end, international investors who will be willing to lend us that money have to have confidence in the fact that the UK's economy remains sound. And if they lose that confidence, what happens is the cost of borrowing for the UK goes up. And that means that yet more money is being spent in interest costs that can't be used to help our economy. So there always has to be a balance. And I think the Chancellor has gone absolutely the extra mile to trying to ensure that we protect the economy through the lockdown, and now that we kickstart the economy once we're able to come out of it safely.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Right now, let's talk to Josh Hardy. He's Deputy Director General of the Confederation of British Industry. Good morning to you, Josh.
Good morning. Good morning. Julia, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much. I'm just wondering, you look always look very fresh-faced when I see you, sir, on the telly. So I'm wondering whether you might fit into this category, but I fear not. This is all going to always butter up the guests. Why not? This is a big day. It's a mini budget, we're told. The big budget's coming in the autumn when perhaps we've got a better grip on quite how bad, let's be honest, quite how bad things are going to be. But there'd been, last time I think we were discussing with you the prospect of this V-shaped recovery that everyone had first talked about. So we went down, like plummeting down, but we could actually bounce back very quickly. I have to say, looking around, I mean, I live and work in fairly central London, and I am not seeing evidence that a lot more people are out and about buying and spending their money because they seem to be a bit concerned. Do you think that what you've heard of the measures so far, and no doubt there'll be a rabbit pulled from the hat as well, but in terms of temporary cuts, the stamp duty, the VAT cut we're told will be happening for the hospitality sector, this £3 billion green jobs package, including vouchers for home insulation, and then now today this £2 billion kickstart workplace scheme for people under 24, where the government basically pay most of their wages and also pay the employer to take them on. Do you think that package that we've heard so far is going to be enough?
I think what we've seen is the government put a huge amount of effort into flattening the curve of the virus. And they're now turning their mind to trying to flatten the curve of unemployment. And that's right. And we've almost seen a down payment on the cure. So that's helping people back into work, whether it's by creating green jobs, whether it's by kickstarting the careers of young people or training in communities. But that is essentially people who are already unemployed. How can we get them back into work? What we hope to see today is a real focus on prevention. How can you give support to those businesses that are really struggling to make sure that people don't become unemployed in the first place? that could be about half of our members say cuts to business rates, for example, would really help. It could be, as Steve said, about stimulating demand through VAT or even through vouchers. But that prevention is going to be so important. If we can get the prevention and the cure working together, we can minimise the impact of unemployment that scars communities.
I mean, indeed. I mean, a lot of us have been concerned about, you know, the people who've got kids and jobs have been existing for years. They've got mortgages, they've got commitments. Losing their jobs will have a devastating effect on a whole family. And yet so much of the focus seems to be on young people at the moment. I don't know if that's just for the news headlines or why that is. But the understanding seems to be that this is, you know, my guest earlier was pointing out that he's seen some research, you know, that losing work in your early 20s can have an effect for, you know, your entire lifetime. Is this absolutely crucial to tackle this particular age group?
It is really important because, yeah, you're right. The evidence is there that unemployment, long-term unemployment, disproportionately scars the young. We know that actually young people tend to be in jobs. More jobs have been lost for young people in the through the virus than other age groups. But it's not solely about young people. So absolutely right to focus on them in many ways. But as we're saying, if we can prevent across the economy job losses, if we can support people back into work across the economy, because this is about gender, this is about race, this is about regions as well. Unemployment scars unevenly. So right to have a focus, but it's not exclusively about young people. There are all sorts of workers that need support.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, it's retail, hospitality and leisure jobs that have been really most at risk. And we know when those furlough schemes start costing employers money with national insurance and the like, and when they end, an awful lot of those people are going to be out of jobs. There just simply isn't going to be the same demand. Even if everyone felt healthy enough and confident enough about the pandemic rearing back that they could go out, there simply won't be enough, you know, people won't have as much money to spend. And yet I wonder how many of those jobs can be replaced. There's been a lot of talk about help for the construction industry, hasn't there? Yes, massive infrastructure projects, build, the Prime Minister said in a speech in Dudley the other week. And yet how many of those jobs are transferable skills? You know, I mean, I've waitressed in, you know, various places. I'm not sure I could transfer my waitressing skills to working on a construction site anytime soon.
No, and I think everybody's been clear that not every job can be saved. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try and support and save as many as possible. And I think this is where local labour markets come in. We have in the past been really good, actually, in this country when there's high unemployment in the local area of job centres, FE colleges, businesses, trade unions working together to redeploy people where their skills do match. And that very often is the case. And where they don't match, to really train them with the skills of the future. We've seen a boost in the green jobs of the future through the Prime Minister's speech. We know there are going to be high-tech digital jobs in the future. Can we get that training in place in local communities so that where there aren't jobs available right now, people get the skills for the jobs that will be there soon, so that you're getting as many people into work and preparing as many people to work as possible.
And let's also talk about this temporary cut to stamp duty. Stamp duty holiday, we're told, basically raising the threshold which currently exists for everyone but first-time buyers of £125,000. I mean, you're buying a garage in a lot of parts of the country for that. But no tax up to £500,000. And so anyone buying a, you know, super-duper property worth more than that, they won't pay any tax themselves. So it's across the board, whether you're, you know, at the bottom of the market or the top of the market, you'll still save money. The maximum you can save is £15,000. That is not to be sneezed at, is it? That's £15,000 that could possibly then be spent on home improvements. You know, go out and use tradesmen and women and buy a new bathroom or whatever. There is a fear, though, that whenever there's a mess around with the taxes on property, it just gets absorbed into the market very, very quickly. Do you think this will make a difference?
I think it can. And again, it's all about stimulating demand. It's all about, if we look at our high streets, you know, retail sales, yes, they've gone up since non-essential retail opened, but they're 30% down on last year. If we can get money in people's pockets, if we can, no scheme is perfect. No scheme is going to 100% filter through into demand. But if we can build confidence, if we can get the wheels moving again, but get people spending again, where it is appropriate and okay for them to do so, that will help prevent the unemployment. That will help drive the innovation, that will help rebuild our economy that we need to do quickly. The Kickstarter scheme for young people, 6 months is great, but we need to make sure that in 6 months' time, that demand's back, the economy's moving, so that those jobs can be kept.
Yeah, indeed. And also, I mean, just in terms of the VAT cut that's been mooted, we don't know if that's happening or not, but the VAT cut for the hospitality sector, so very much a targeted tax. Again, is the issue price people going out? I mean, is it, a lot of it's more confidence than price, or are we expecting that VAT cut effectively to be just keeping, you know, instead of the VAT being charged as part of the price of getting a drink or going out to eat, restaurants and bars are just going to keep that money themselves effectively. So we won't see price cuts as such to entice people in, but it will enable those businesses to make some semblance of a profit when they've got far fewer customers actually using their services. Is that, do you think, the key aim there?
Yes, well, I think if it's used to support businesses, this isn't about businesses actually increasing their profits in the hospitality sector. This is about businesses managing to survive so that they can protect those jobs. So we'll see how the Chancellor delivers any VAT cuts, or even there are rumours of voucher schemes to support particular industries, which clearly would be there to stimulate consumer spending. Both can be valuable. Both can help get this sector that is under such stress through this crisis. And those good businesses that could survive on the other side, it's right to support them. So all eyes on the detail. But some good signals coming out.
Well, fingers crossed, yes. We'll be getting that announcement from Rishi Sunak soon after 12:30 today.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Later this morning, the Metropolitan Police Chief at Cressida Dick it will be appearing in front of MPs on the Home Affairs Select Committee by Zoom, where she's going to be answering questions on the police handling of the coronavirus crisis and, of course, the lockdown rules, but also talking about the ongoing difficulty of relations between the Met Police and black and ethnic minority communities, obviously, particularly in the wake of that case involving the British athlete. Well, Graham Wetton's joining us now. He's a policing analyst and author of How to Be a Police Officer. Good morning to you, Graham.
Morning, Julia.
It's probably going to be a rather uncomfortable committee appearance for Cressida Dick, isn't it? She's kind of up against it in terms of from the people who say the police didn't sort of go in hard enough and, you know, deal with things like Black Lives Matter protests, beating a retreat when it came to block parties and street parties where the police were chased away, but also being overzealous policing people, you know, just going for a sit-down picnic in the park.
I think it will be a difficult appearance for her. She's with Helen Ball, one of the assistant commissioners, and the pair of them will have some tough questions to answer. But again, it's, I'd almost say, well, what do you want us to do? What does Parliament, what does the public actually want the police to do? And we tend to hear from the vocal minority as to the fact it's been this overzealous policing of COVID, it's they're enforcing those protests too much. From the silent majority, I think, actually want the police to police and enforce the law.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Just want it to just be, you know, pretty much everyone treated the exact same. And this, of course, has been an issue with Bianca Williams, the British athlete, protege of Linford Christie. These accusations from her and her sprinter partner that the British police, certainly the Met Police, are racist and they were racially profiled, pulled over in their flash Mercedes car simply because he was a black man driving a flash car in northwest London. And we know the Met Police have offered to sort of meet with the couple, but again, we don't really know the full sides of both stories. We're told by the police that nothing happened untoward and there was good reason to stop them, unless we've seen all the footage and had the whole video from start to finish, which we've not yet seen. We suppose we can't really give a final verdict, can we? But what do you think about what you know so far about that decision by the police to stop that couple?
I think you just hit the nail on the head. We haven't got the full story yet. There are two sides to every story. We've only got one side so far. We've had a statement from the Met that says they've reviewed the officer's body-worn video, and they're happy there was nothing untoward there at all. They're happy they had reasonable grounds to stop them in the first place. The police are saying they sped away, they indicate for them to stop. I find it difficult to understand. Who videoed their journey home on a mobile phone unless you've drawn attention to yourself? I certainly never do. So there's aspects of the case that concern me, but I think it's under investigation and that have self-referred themselves to the Independent Office of Police Conduct. So that will come out in the fullness of time. But it just seems strange that it was, if you're not happy with that incident, why would you not complain to the police first of all? It seems the police almost had to ask them to come forward so they can speak to them, which I found a strange turn of events.
There's also accusing police officers whose cameras were on whose faces were on camera of racism. would feel pretty unfair to those officers if they did feel they were doing the right thing. But this is the sort of stuff that's going to be debated, isn't it, with Cresta Dick. Also, no doubt, the rather bad timing for her report from Sir Tom Windsor out today. He, of course, is the Chief Inspector of Constabulary, and his report basically saying that the police simply aren't doing their job, and that crime victims are getting, he says, a limited service, if any, from the police. That's pretty damning. 7.3% of crime solved. People not willing to go ahead because they don't trust any culprits ever going to be caught. When you have policing by consent, and the vast majority of people don't feel that actually the police are on their side doing the job and looking after them, that is going to be a real long-term problem for the police, isn't it?
It is, yes, but again, without sounding like a broken record, you're coming out the back of a significant period of time of resource cuts, budget cuts, austerity cuts, police officers, police stuff. We've done all this before in interviews with you. But there's a national shortage of detectives. The police have had to prioritise over the last 10, 12 years or so in what they have to focus their investigations on. So many of the crimes you mentioned, burglaries, thefts, the damage that happened to many, many members of the public, the lower level tier of crimes, shall we say, as opposed to the murders, the stabbings, the serious sexual assaults. You have to prioritise what your investigations go into and where your detectives investigate. So many of these other crimes, the burglaries, thefts, etc., have now been investigated by response officers. Officers work in shifts. You could pick up a burglary, report a burglary on a late turn, 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. The next 2 days, you're nights. Your victims, look, they want you to knock on their door at 4 a.m. Then you're 3 or 4 days off. So by the time you come back to investigate that case, a whole week has gone past. So it's not the fault of the officers doing this. And then when you come back on duty, you could be on a protest somewhere or at court or somewhere else. So you actually might not get back to speak to your victim for over a week. And that's where people feel that they're not getting a good service. And they're not, but it is how the system has now evolved.
Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.